You'd be surprised how many people back in camp are creeped out over your triumphant return. Not so many people will miss you as you might think. So do us all a favor. Start walking.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 52, for the week of December 29th, 2014. I am Yahoo Sloppy Seconds, David T. Cole, and I'm here with bloated prequel Sarah D. Bunting.
A man dressed as a bat gets all our press.
And lethargic tap dancer Tara Ariano.
I'll get you, Peter Pan! You know, we've all heard a lot of terrible Christopher Walken impressions, but if I may, that was the terriblest.
That wasn't great.
No.
I think it went with the theme of his not caring at all.
That's true. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
We all are alive. Thank you, everyone, for your patience and your tweets of concern after our much longer than expected absence. Turns out moving across an ocean is a lot more complicated than you might guess or anticipate or hope.
Or maybe it's exactly as complicated as you think, and we were just underestimating how long the process would take.
Yeah. Well, anyway, thank you. And so this is going to be a bit of like a maxi mini episode. We will not have a canon or a game time or any of that jazz, but we're here.
That's next week.
We're queer. Get used
we
to it.
Be back in full
and you're probably used to it.
So first of all, Dave, did you want to talk a little bit about what you have been doing during our break?
Yeah, so basically I left just before Halloween and skipped ahead to the Big Island. It's where we are right now in Hawaii, and got the house ready. You know, had to paint and, you know, fix stuff up and, well, pay people to do those things because I don't really know how. I'm trying to learn, though. And, you know, basically just get the house ready for when Tara and her family was going to come for Christmas and blah, blah, blah. You know, kind of got it ready, but there's a lot of things to do and a lot of... things that didn't quite happen right, like, you know, installation of this and that, blah, blah, blah. So then Tara and her family comes and they're doing, you know, vacation-y things. And we all decided to go ziplining.
On Friday.
We've been before. We went with, infamously went with Pammy about 5-6 years ago. And it was a lot of fun. Took some video and stuff online.
Not to the same zipline courses we went to
this
week.
No, this one was new, actually about 5 years old. So it probably just opened after we left. And we were on the third zip of the course.
Third of nine.
Yeah. And it was beautiful. It was very nice. And it was fun for those first two. And ahead of me, so the first few were like tandem zips. So you're zipping beside somebody on another line. And
I think the idea is just to make it go faster so you don't have to wait for each person to go at a time.
Right. And ahead of me were a mother and her daughter from Japan, didn't speak a lick of English, which is going to come into the story in a bit. They went ahead of me, and the third zip was the first, like, really long one, I think, or the second really long one. Anyways, you had a lot of time to pick up some speed. Is what
and
I'm getting
ponder
at.
Your mortality, I guess.
What they do is they wave on the next group when the group before you has gotten to the end and are unhooked.
So there's a guide at the end of the line and a guide at the start, and they walkie to each other like, okay, send the next one.
Right. So they walkie up to where me and this guy are waiting, and they say, all right, bring on the next one. So we go zipping, and I'm doing like this. They say, like, do the cannonball. It'll make you go even faster. There's less, you know, surface to create drag, and it'll be great.
Oh,
I'm
boy.
Like, all right, fine. And that's fine. Everybody was doing it. Not a big deal. It's not the lesson to take away from this story.
No, by this point, my 6-year-old niece had been, like, zipping upside down. So, you know.
Remember that Japanese mom and kid. So they, you know, got to the end, they got unhooked, and then something happened. I don't know exactly what, but the gist of it is the kid didn't know to get off, and nobody could communicate to get off the platform, you know, and go, you know, with all the other people down the stairs and off the thing. So the guide was very distracted. And the only way you stop at the end of the line is if the guide stops you with some sort of braking mechanism made of blocks. It's not like an auto thing. He has to like pull on something and that slows the line down. Guess what he didn't do? He didn't do that. So I'm barreling in at God knows how many miles per hour.
Oh, it had to be at least 40.
Probably. And kind of, you know, like the braking only happens in the last, I'm going to say, 15 feet of the run.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you don't
and
really...
And then a different kind of braking begins.
Well...
Spoiler?
Yeah.
And so I just, like, I get past the point where I think the braking is going to begin. I'm like, well, this is strange. This is going to be a fast break. Nope. The braking starts at about 1/1,000,000th of a second before my back rams into the big giant wood pole at the end of the line.
That the zip line is attached to.
That is attached to. I instantly kind of crumple in my harness. And everybody kind of spins around to notice, oh, yeah, there's a guy coming down the line. The other guy was fine. His guide was on it. So he got braked fine. Me, I just go slamming. I kind of like figured out something was wrong, you know, in the last, you know, half a second. So I kind of, I want to say I turned my back, but what I probably really did is just got into a fetal position because I was scared. And whatever that turn did, it basically stopped me from going center back first. And I went right side of my back first into the pole.
So you didn't strike his spine, which
so
is
didn't strike
good.
My spine. I don't think I hit my head, but holy shit, does my back hurt.
Yeah.
Like,
it's not great.
Right away, it got really red. The pisser is, though, it's like, if I just poke it, it kind of feels like it's been shredded with a cheese grater. It's like that kind of pain.
But you can't see anything.
There's no
discoloration.
If I'm going to go fucking through this whole thing, get slammed into a pole, like God knows.
Yeah, you want
a war wound.
Scars, totally. Yeah. Yeah, so I continued because Dave told me to, feeling like a terrible wife the whole time. That said, it is super fun. And then at the end of it, this guy comes up to
way
me.
Way to sell it, guys.
I know. It is really, really fun. That's the saddest part of it because Dave really liked it the first time we did it, like obviously enough to do it again. And now I assume he'll never, ever do it again. Not that I blame him. But then, yeah, I get off at the end and then this guy comes and meets me at the steps with Dave's keys. I'm like, oh, this isn't great because the general manager had taken Dave to the hospital, which is where we spent the rest of that night, but Dave is fine, other than bruised.
Yeah, CT scans came back, nothing going on with my spine or head or neck or anything like that. So
just reminds me of that Yogi Berra quote, CAT scan revealed nothing. Gotta watch your phrasing there.
Anyway, so this was the perfect setup for Dave to have some therapeutic time yesterday preparing for this very podcast yes. We are about to record. So like I said, not a standard episode. This is more of a maxi mini. And our topic today is 2014 TV year in review. So we have several topics where we have each chosen superlatives and we're going to go around the horn and compare. We don't know each other's lists, although... You know, we can probably guess, and I did try to make choices that I didn't think either of my colleagues would make so that we would avoid duplication. So I guess I will start now. Our first topic is Best New Show, and my pick is Broad City. The Comedy Central show that we've talked about a lot here, it's coming back this month in just a few weeks, this January. It will be back on Wednesday nights. Please check it out. It is so crazy funny. I can't imagine how much weirder and awesomer it's going to be in season two than it was in season one, but I'm excited to see how they're able to up the ante. And yeah, that's my
pick. Seek out, if you haven't watched it, watch the Parcel episode and see if that gets you interested, because that's the one I think that's gonna
that was definitely the best episode. I think that's episode 3. Yeah, somebody made a meme for Christmas because her Parcel lady's name is Garrel, so someone put a Santa hat on her and said Merry Christmas from Christmas Garrel. So that's my pick. Yeah. Dave.
Oh yeah. Okay. So my pick, I had two in case you picked one of them, but the problem with these year review things is I can never remember quite if the stuff I remember from the beginning of the year happened in 2014 or late 2013.
Mm-hmm.
So with that in mind, I have two. One I'm going to say is Review on the comedy side of things, which is Andy Daly's Comedy Central take on an Australian show. We talked about it on the podcast. You may remember us going on and on about the pancake episode.
Yep.
Oh, yes.
That, also episode 3, I think.
Yeah. it's sort of Andy Daly plays this guy, and he's basically just like, you challenge him to something and he'll do it. So you ask his question, what's it like to eat 10 pancakes in a day or whatever it was? What's it like to get addicted to drugs? So he goes out and gets addicted to drugs.
What's it like to get divorced?
Yeah. And there's a surprising amount of continuity throughout the season too. You know, things that happen in the first couple episodes come back to bite him, and other episodes, there's a continuity with his family because of the whole divorce question and everything that's going on. It's really funny. Andy Daly's a really funny guy, and I think he really nailed it with that show. Drama side, I'm going to go with Manhattan from WGN. I really like that show. I wouldn't blame anybody for not watching it because I realize it's an incredibly niche program about the people that basically built the atomic bomb. But if you're transitioning from a normal person to that kind of weirdo that has World War II coffee table books, I bet you're really gonna like this show.
You're entering your dad years, in other words.
Yeah. Suddenly you know a lot about submarines.
You're already your own grandfather. Is that yeah, also a demographic that enjoys that?
Yep.
I think you would like this show, actually, Sarah. My hesitation about it, my worry, I should say, is that like a lot of these period shows, that the female characters would be really thin, but they're actually not. And not in a way that makes it seem, you know, weird or anachronistic, or like someone got a note that was like, no, someone has to blah. Like, it feels very organic, the way that they've actually given kinds of agency to the characters.
Yes. I would say yes to Olivia Williams' character in that regard, but the other one, whose name I don't remember.
Who's?
But she,
the scientist or the wife?
The wife of the upstart scientist.
Oh, yeah.
The younger guy who has like this lesbian affair.
Oh, yeah. Before we proceed, assume that this podcast is going to be loaded with spoilers. So listen at your own. Well, whatever. People should know.
Yeah. That was a bit out of left field. And
maybe.
I thought, even like given the period too, it seemed like it was a very quick zero to lesbian.
Perhaps. There's another character who's also a physicist on the development team. And there's an episode where she and this upstart guy that Dave mentioned go to the site in Oak Ridge, which Dave and I have actually visited. There's a science museum there, which is very cool. And she meets this other guy who's on that team, and nobody's listening to him or paying attention or letting him do anything except get coffee because he's black. And so he's sort of like, this is bullshit. You should understand you're a woman. I'm sure you're getting treated like shit too. And so they have a moment where they're like, she tells him in so many words, a rising tide lifts all boats, which I know is it's a phrase that Sarah and I have used a lot of times in other contexts. But then in a later moment, there comes a time when she could help this guy. And then she's like, well, fuck him. I'm going to put myself first, which is also like a very truthful human thing to do, which I appreciated that. So it's a smart show. Good pick, Dave.
Thank you. Sarah?
I'm going to go with True Detective.
Nice.
Surprised nobody else picked it. It did hold. I wasn't sure it was going to hold up once we got to the end of the year and it was sort of time to make these lists. And I did help out with HitFix's annual TV critics poll, which was really fun to do because it really like made me think about what did I like this year, and wow, this year really had a lot of months and shows in it. And I was like, oh yeah, True Detective was this year, because I think it started in January. Yeah. So it really did seem like a long time ago, and I was like just writing everything down and then ranking everything, and I found that it still floated to the top of my list, that it was definitely, I mean, I think it's been a little, you know, oversubscribed, let's put it that way. Not overpraised, but I think just it's good that it was short and then let everyone step back from it. But I'm super excited for season two. And it was the show I looked forward to the most each week when it was on. So
yeah, I would like, fine. Now that I know how it ends, I would like to go back and watch it again. I mean, it's only 8 episodes, just to see how it reads differently without the central mystery part being, you know, a question, like, that I would be able to appreciate it in a different way without thinking of the whodunit aspect.
And the other part of that whole series that was great was how it did not meet everybody's stupid internet theory expectations that it was going to be, like, all this crazy shit. It ended up just being, you know, a crime drama with some, you know, crazy set dressing, really. I mean, it wasn't, you know, this Cthulhu Lovecraftian thing, you know, he just like borrowed a title or something like that. You know what I mean? He just like snuck some Easter eggs in for those who, you know, knew you know, the reference he was making. And just like, that was great, because it was like, if that happened, I was just like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, we shut up the internet.
Yeah, exactly. Shut up the internet.
All right, moving on. Favorite couple / pair, and I couldn't narrow it down to one, so here are all of mine. I'm just going to poop them all out right here. Jamie and Claire of Outlander.
Outlander. You'll never find love here in the past, Outlander.
But they did, Dave. Oh, they did.
I see.
They had what is probably the hottest sex scene of all of TV this year. They are both adorable together, and I just love that show so much. Can't wait for it to come back.
Haggis.
Okay, Dave.
Outlander.
Honorable mentions to Ike and Zoe of Nurse Jackie. That, of course, is the characters played by Morris Chestnut and the great Merritt Weaver. So cute together as a couple. Just loved their relationship. They were so sweet and they were fun to watch. They were a rare bright spot in that show, which can be a slog. Diane and Kurt of The Good Wife. So glad they finally got married this year, because she's great and he's great. And even though I'm dubious about cross political party affiliations, I will make an exception for that guy because it's Gary Cole and he's amazing. Speaking of Gary Cole, not him, but the other show he was on this year being awesome in Veep, I got to give it up for Selena and Gary, the power couple of Washington and the carrier of Leviathan. And I'm very, very excited for that show to come back too, especially since it's going to have a major big reset in its next season. Dave.
Favorite couple, well, not actually, favorite pair couple in between Twilight is Daryl and Carol from The Walking Dead.
Okay.
Two characters that have progressed a lot from where they started, from redneck to kind of team member, and from meek mother to, you know, warrior.
Yeah.
No nonsense.
Badass.
Pragmatist, zombie killing, other thing killing. Lady. Work really well together, and they're kind of teasing out something maybe that's going to happen with them, certainly this past season, and they seem to be very good together. They seem to be oddly, you know, Daryl, when he's with Carol, becomes the emotional center of the show, which is a far cry from where everybody started. So that's an interesting dynamic that only happens when he's with her. And I really like them together a lot. The other, my favorite pair of this season by far is Tara Ariano and Under the Dome. The show that Tara hates with a thousand million suns. I was so happy when I found out it got renewed, not to skip ahead.
You fucking asshole. How did you make it happen?
But another season of Tara coverage on this podcast and on Previously TV delights me to no end.
Boo.
Sarah.
Tori and Dean.
Ah!
Nope. Just kidding.
That would have been completely acceptable, though.
That's the Through the Looking Glass version.
Also Tori and Piglet.
I also had a couple, and my honorable mention, I'm surprised that Tara didn't mention, which is the Ladies of Playing House, blissfully renewed recently.
Yep.
Thank you.
They were on my list, and then I took them off because I thought you might pick them.
Yeah, that's why honorable mentioned them, but once again, we're back to True Detective, Rust and Marty.
You got it. You really got it.
Yeah.
All right, moving on yet again. Most tragic cancellation, I have a few. Utopia, the British one. Not that I didn't think that its story was well told. That was a fine place to stop. I'm just sad for selfish reasons that it's not going to continue, much as I am about Borgen, although that might have been last year, not this year.
Yeah.
Trophy Wife, not a perfect show, but one that I thought was finding its feet and getting better. It had really figured some of its stuff out by the end of the season, so it's a shame that it didn't get more of a chance to
I was surprised
continue.
That one got canceled. I guess, I mean, I don't pay attention to numbers and stuff like that, but yeah. It felt like a lot of people were watching it, but I guess it was just one of those.
It was a buzz,
internet buzz show.
A buzz hit. Yeah. See, also the comeback.
Exactly.
Well, I feel like all the critics are watching it, and then nobody else.
Yeah, that's,
exactly.
That's what I meant.
And see, also Enlisted. Sigh.
That was next on my list. But I have to give the top slot to The Carrie Diaries, which was such a sentimental favorite of mine. It was so sweet and just lovely and pleasant to watch. Didn't tackle a lot of super hard issues, but and the fashions were probably not really period appropriate, although not as bad as Rags to Riches. So I really, I still miss it. I'm sad it's not coming back. I can't say that the CW didn't give it a fair shot because it did get two seasons, but still, it's a bummer. Dave.
Hieroglyph. The show that was canceled before it even started.
Yeah.
The memory of me reading the script is fading, but I believe it was basically a what-if scenario that what if the Egyptian empire never fell, carried to modern times, mm-hmm. and everything, all the technology we have today sort of exists, but it all has this Egyptian tinge to it.
Oh, God.
On top of that, I believe you put a crime story and sort of a political story. So it's sort of like Gotham in ancient Egypt.
Oh, boy.
And but the ways that they brought Egypt into, you know, the culture and into the setting uh-huh. were really just, it was almost humanin, which is exactly like today, except they would uh-huh. say, so like, let's go down, like it would be, let's go, you don't want to go to the Scarab District. That's bad news.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like, you know, it was just like.
So it's not quite Ralph Wiggum stupid. It's just like dumb enough that you notice it and think it's a reach.
Yeah. Basically, right. It was just like they just threw some Egyptian clothes on a regular series. But just the fact that they did that sounded so terrible. And I was so looking forward to it. You know, they still have a pharaoh. And everything. It sounded just like a total fucking train wreck. And yeah. I guess Fox agreed, unfortunately, too soon that it was a train wreck. And they canceled it before it got to, I think even before it got to pilot. So,
Dave, you still got Dig to look forward to. That one is still happening.
Yeah, right. Dig. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Sarah?
None of the cancellations struck me as that tragic, at least nothing that I watched on a regular basis. I think that Enlisted episode that. Was it up for the canon?
Yeah, John presented it. Presented the series finale for the canon.
Killed me, but I still haven't gone back and caught up, so I can't rightly claim that as one of mine. I still feel like Crazy Hearts Nashville should have been given more time or more of a chance because that was like a just strangely appealing and unaffected reality show. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to go with Selfie, actually, because it was actually, as much as I shat on it in my new show fact sheet on the subject, it had some good ideas. It was developing some chemistry between the leads. Yeah. There was like this really weird performance happening with Charmique's kid, Kevin. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, it was like really, it's absolutely never the acting choice you expect from the kid, which was kind of amazing. And John Cho is the best.
He is, agreed.
Was really selling, like he had some, he's like speaking in a British accent to his yogurt, like in this subplot where he's like home on a Saturday night, like cleaning and neatening up his fridge, obviously. And then he's like, and then he has this other line. I think it's the same episode where he's like, what do you think? Just because I'm Korean, I love K-pop. And there's a pause. And P.S. Kevin, the 6-year-old, is DJing. And then they just all start bugging out to K-pop. And it was like the premise of the show was like, you know, it's like the whatever used car principle. Like the minute you drive it off the lot, it loses Blue Book value. Like that concept is just dated immediately.
Yeah.
But the actual people, like once they started kind of having it be like, you know, them advising each other and being friends, it worked better and was just a workplace comedy. And I think it might've gotten good. So I was a little sad.
Once again, an incredibly poorly named series probably also hurt that show's chances. Cause you hear Selfie, you're immediately either going to give it a chance. You're either in the maybe column or in the no column on that one, right? Because there's just a visceral reaction to Selfie culture. And if you don't do the research on the show ahead of time, and why would you, and you don't have to, then you might just dismiss it entirely. It would be like if there was a show.
It's this year's Cougar Town.
Yeah, well, no, it would be like if this was set in 1978 and they called it Microwave.
Yeah. You know, the other problem it had probably was, I believe it was paired with Manhattan Love Story, right?
It was.
Which was horrible.
Yeah.
That was the opposite of a tragic cancellation. It was the justice cancellation of this year, probably.
All right, Tara.
Moving on. Most tragic renewal. Everyone can see this coming. Under the Dome. Oh. Those fuckers.
Everyone in this room is now dumb.
Domer.
For having listened to it.
Dave knew I was going to pick that somehow.
You're welcome, Dave.
I mean, what more is there to say? I believe I left it all on the floor in terms of season two and how shittiest it was.
Can we do at some point for the site,
yeah,
like a serious consideration of the dumbest show ever on TV?
Please.
Like, of an ilk, right?
Yeah.
Like, of a certain length, of a certain stature, you know, like a network show or something like the dumbest network show ever.
Yeah.
Because, wow, it's going to be really hard to beat Under the Dome.
I'm sure I've said this 7,000 times, is that the problem with the show is that it could be good. Like, it's an interesting idea what happens to a town when they're trapped under a dome. Like, what happens when your mobility is limited, when your resources are curtailed, like all of that stuff. And then it's like, nope, we're just going to go underground. Doop, 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 doop. Like, there's abandoning all of what could have made it cool. I assume Stephen King is at fault because he wrote the book, even if the show is a big departure from whatever he came up with, because I think it already is taking, like, it's the time elapsed in the show universe is like days and days and days longer than what's actually in the book.
Right.
I don't care. I fucking hate that show and I can't quit it. So thanks a lot, CBS.
I think that's the key parameter, is like, dumbest show ever. Like, the 50s are just going to have us all beat going away, because they just put any damn thing. Like, My Mother the Car.
Yeah.
Lassie was on for
the
a while.
Nuts.
Yeah, but the thing about
somewhere.
My Mother the Car is that it's a stupid premise, but it's self-aware and it sort of plays into it. Whereas Under the Dome, I don't know the people that write for it, if they're just like, they go to work and like, oh fuck, we got to do this again. I kind of feel like they just gave up and they have all these cue cards with random ideas and they just pick four and they stick it into an arc and away you go.
Blood Rain.
Yeah, but the reach of Under the Dome versus what you get out of the screen, the disparity is much more than My Mother the Car. So I think even if you introduce
all this.
Right,
but that's sort of what I'm saying, that it's like, all right, there's this dumb concept.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it knows. It's right there in the title. My mother is a car.
Right.
Yeah, and the car doesn't turn into a horse the next episode for no reason at all.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's
the car isn't from space. I mean, Well, I mean, my entry for this category suffers from a similar problem, but I think it's
actually... Well, why don't you go first? Because I got a few. Why don't you go ahead then?
Okay. Mine is White Collar.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like the reach and results difference. Mm-hmm. It's for different reasons. And I think Under the Dome was only sort of good and believable for like the first, I'm going to say 7 to 12 minutes of airtime. Whereas White Collar was like, I mean, yeah, it was a USA show and it was always going to like fall to earth eventually, but we didn't expect this much of a thud. At least I didn't. And it should not have been brought back even for a 6-episode, like, little coda. If this like idiot plot phoned in drag was the best they could do. And, you know, Matt Bomer, I love you. You're cute. Maybe one day I'll get to meet you and put you in my pocket. But be a pro. Don't phone it in.
Yeah.
And apparently, when John Ramos and I were doing our coverage of the series finale, apparently that, like, non-ending ending, which sold out every single character, was Bomer and Tim DeKay's idea that they sold the writer on. And they're like, you know, we'd like to be a part of the collaborative, whatever. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But just the whole, it just made me sad, because this used to be a really clever show that thought we and its characters were smart. And then it was just like, well, let's, you know, follow the blueprint.
If you can explain it quickly, if not.
He Romeo and Julietted his own death, wound up in Paris. Didn't tell Maz.
Oh.
Are you sure you're like watching super... Batman? Because he did at the end of Batman.
No, I'm not sure.
Was Michael Caine there looking at him,
Batman,
smiling?
It was kind of interesting and maybe earned.
Peter Pan. Okay. Well, I'm surprised you didn't pick Turn.
No. Yeah.
Sarah?
That doesn't really rise to the level of tragedy.
Okay. How about Tyrant?
There's a Tyrant?
Yeah, there was a season one. It was quite terrible and boring.
And offensive.
Yeah, and now there's season two for some reason, which is weird because I don't know anybody who's watching that
one.
Dominion from the...
Dominion!
from the Good Enough Network sci-fi.
Oh.
I started to watch that Ascension show
Oh, yeah, we watched a little bit of it
recorded,
last night.
I'm like, oh, God, sci-fi.
Come I mean, on, it's guys. Only a miniseries, but I'm sure it was intended as a maybe pilot.
Do you want to reenact
Although
that?
On the sci-fi renewal tip, I have it on extremely good authority that Helix Season 2 is bonkalula. So
oh, really?
Get some.
Because that was on my list, too. Helix goes the first season.
Well, we didn't get it. We didn't make it to the end.
So if they can basically reboot it, then that's probably good. If they, like...
There's a floating eyeball. There's a floating eyeball.
All right. Okay. All right.
It's like a character, I think. Anyway.
And then
you might give it another try.
And then maybe I'll throw in Community just to put it there.
Agreed. Yeah.
Kill it. Stake it through the heart. Yeah. Enough already. God.
All right, Tara, what's next?
Okay. Favorite under the radar show. I'm going to cheat a little bit. I mean, Black Mirror seems like the obvious one because now it's on Netflix and everyone who doesn't have the means or...
Did you like the Christmas special?
...know how to fly to England can see it. Did I like the Christmas special?
I thought it was one of the weaker... things they had on.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting idea. It was too long. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It could have been an hour, but I'm not going to criticize anything that John Hamm's in, like, ever? Mm. Ever. Mm. So I thought it was good. But my pick is Prisoners of War, which season two of it just went up on Hulu this year. Yep. I don't know when it aired in its original Israel. I think we've talked about the show on the podcast before. It's the show that Homeland is extremely loosely based on. Yep. Even more loosely in season two. Yeah. The premise is there are these three prisoners of war that have been locked up for a million years and they get out. And so it's about their integration back into society, except unlike Homeland, there aren't as many competing sort of conspiratorial elements. But season two really...
But are there huevos rancheros?
There's no huevos rancheros. A lot of salad for breakfast.
Thumbs
apparently
down.
That's what they eat in Israel. But without giving away too much about the plot, it's really, really worth watching. Both seasons, season one and two, are both up on Hulu. And it's really interesting and great. And if you've been soured on Homeland, don't let that affect you.
Well, if you've watched Homeland, it's interesting to see
the contrast.
What departures they took. Because Prisoners of War, I wouldn't call it... Well, I mean, it's a more human story.
Yeah. It's still soapy, but it's not as ridiculous as Homeland.
Exactly.
I feel like.
And... it's more realistic, you know, in the boundaries of a TV show that's, you know, can get a little crazy sometimes, but it doesn't seem
I mean,
seem
some
as
crazy
cartoony.
Shit still happens, but not as crazy as Homeland.
Yeah, and the fact that Homeland combined a couple characters from Prisoners of War, once you see how it plays out in Prisoners of War, it's so much better.
Yeah, it's really, I really, really highly recommend it. This is coming out, I assume you'll hear this when you still have a few days of vacation and not very many shows are on. So if you're looking for something that you can easily binge watch and you don't mind subtitles, Prisoners of War on Hulu.
Yeah.
Dave.
So started watching Gravity Falls, which I know late to the, you know, season two.
Yeah.
But what a great cartoon.
So funny.
It's really cute and really funny. And one of those shows that, you know, if I had kids, I would definitely watch with them because it's something that I could get a lot out of.
Yep.
It very much would have been the kind of show I would have eaten up, you know, when I was 5 or 6 or whatever. But it's,
or when you're 42.
Sure, yeah. But what I'm saying is good for them. Good for me.
Yep.
The other one I'm going to say is it's a bit of a cheat, but it's the only place I could stick it in, which is I took Tripp Payne's advice and I watched The Genius, which was his... plug when he was on here last, and if you remember, that's the Korean reality show that's all about well go back and listen to it, it's really hard to explain. But anyways, he was right, it's really, really good. You can watch the first season, it's on I think YouTube. Basically, if you Google The Genius subtitles or something like that, you'll find where they're hidden. But it's really, really fun. There's a couple of the challenges that are repetitive throughout the season. Like they have kind of 3 or 4 go-to elimination challenges. So once you actually watch it for the third time, it's sort of like, oh, okay. And it's also like this very confusing Korean board game, which if you haven't grown up with it, there's no way you're going to learn the rules. But there's enough other stuff in there to keep you interested. And you know how much I really don't like reality shows. So when I say reality show is worth it, you better believe it.
Sarah.
Well, my favorite under the radar show is a reality show. this little program called The Chair. Yeah. It aired on Stars. You may have heard me mention it 11 bazillion times on this podcast. Mm-hmm. It had so many layers and did such a good job sort of story arcing these two directors who were making their first films. And they were the show was really transparent about both its process and like when it wasn't working and the things that they weren't sure how it was going to turn out and that they'd never sort of built a show in this way before. And I just thought that was, I don't know, it was like watching an hour documentary every week for 10 weeks with people who are super frustrating but very watchable about a medium that I love. So it was great, really well done. Chris Moore of the original Project Greenlight is the brains behind it. It's a really well-built show. It's not, there's not that like obvious third take of someone walking through a door that you get on a lot of reality shows. And I don't know where you can watch it if you don't have access to Stars Play, but maybe it will come to Netflix or Hulu soon.
I'm sure it's got to be coming to Netflix anytime soon. It's so good. One of my biggest pleasures was, normally I don't, like if someone else is covering a show, I'll like leave it for a while. Because if I don't have to watch it right away, like for triage purposes, I have to parcel out my TV watching in strategic ways. But that was the exception. Even though Sarah was writing about it, I had to make sure that I watched it right away so that I could really enjoy her coverage of it, which was excellent all this season. Awesome job, Sarah.
Oh, thank you.
And the
that
show
was, your catfish then.
Yeah.
Chair-fished you. Awesome.
Totally. Yeah, it's so much fun to watch. The other thing that makes it so interesting, not just the production values were like weirdly high for a reality show. Like it looked expensive, even though while you're watching it, you know for a fact that it's not. And in fact, they're scrambling for money like all the time. But that was another thing that made it interesting is like how much of the process they showed you, including like the directors who were the subjects talking about, you know, worrying about how they were going to be portrayed on the show and that making it into the show, which like I have to think that happens on all reality shows, but you just never ever see it. So that was really cool too. Great show. Excellent pick.
Thanks.
And our next topic is most indispensable network. And I'm going to give this, despite Tyrant, to FX. I think that's the network that I've had the most good experiences with sampling new shows, and I will be I'm most likely to give new series the benefit of the doubt and give them a shot than probably any other network that I watch. And right now we're heading into a season when like Justified is starting, and then the week after that The Americans is starting, and It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is coming back, which is not really my jam anymore, but I'm interested to return to it and see how it's changed and if it's worth picking back up this season. And Tyrant aside, FX is my pick. Dave.
So in the period when I was getting the house ready, but you weren't here and I didn't have DirecTV yet or anything like that, basically I had a plastic red Adirondack chair and my computer, and that's how I had to live for about 2 weeks.
Yeah, you were really roughing it.
So Netflix was my friend. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even saying Netflix because of the original programming, like Orange is the New Black. I'm saying Netflix because it is a treasure trove of nerd shows. If you want sort of like pop history stuff, kind of like, or even sort of the kind of shows they used to do 10, 15 years ago, like, and now the story of, the Egyptian, First Kingdom. And in seven parts.
Western art.
Yeah. Well, not even Western art. It's always something to do. It always has to have angry gods, war, or sex. Like, that's always, like, kind of the hook for it. They'll never do an art history show.
I'm sure there is one.
Well, it would have to be, like, art history, like, sex through the ages through art or something like that. But I watched a whole bunch. There's one called Myth Hunters. That was actually halfway decent. And here's why. You know how I always say history shows the network could be called It's Up to You to Decide? Because the end is never, they never have an ending. Yeah. Like, it's always like a mystery and it's unsolved. And they don't anything to add.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Or in the Ancient Aliens vein, it's like, people say this. Yep. Do you, you know, like, okay, people say
we may never know. Credits.
But Myth Hunters actually has half the shows have an ending where they figured it out, and some of them are like, oh, well, you know, this is still a mystery, so, you know, have at it, Holy Grail Seekers or whatever, you know. So that was kind of fun because the myths were small enough that I didn't really know about them. Like, there were some about gold in the Old West, or some about samurais, or some about, you know, some biblical things. So they're all over the map, and they were small enough that I didn't know about them, so I didn't know the outcome, but they're still pretty interesting. So Netflix, thanks for carrying me through the dark period without DirecTV.
Notice that I did not arrive in Hawaii until all that shit was set up, because I can't. Oh,
and
I can't.
If you have DirecTV, you know that the dish is about the size of a like a dinner plate in Hawaii, just because of where it is. It's the size of a golf cart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's giant.
Yeah. And they have to, like, bolt it to the ground.
We can just barely park our car beside it.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, Sarah.
I have two different categories for this. I will begin with the honorable mention hotel category.
Yeah.
With a channel that in my household, and possibly at Fort Awesome now, is called Just the Channel.
Yeah.
Because when I was on vacay last summer, there was two PBS's Spanish language, like, seemed to be all cooking shows, which we did watch a little of.
Yes.
I think also PBS. And then ION, which is a healthy Amero-Canadian mix.
Sure it is.
Of the kinds of procedurals that Grandpa Bunsey really enjoys, like Cold Case.
Yep.
Okay, saying I enjoyed Flashpoint is really pushing it, but I do like Enrico
Colantoni. That was my next, that was going to be a joke. Hey, I'm on Flashpoint. There's a good Canadian.
Yep,
oh,
it lives
there
on.
It is.
Yep.
There it is. Yeah, I'm that one who still... likes Without a Trace, and I'm like, oh, I think they'd stop sleeping together, and now she's sleeping with the mayor of Nashville from Nashville, and my husband's like, all those words are in English. I don't know what you're talking about. So, ION.
Yeah.
Channel 31 in the New York City Time Warner constellation.
Somewhere ION's PR person just, like, woke up in bed. Holy shit!
Someone has been positively entertained!
I think the channels, since my I arrived here with my sister and my two nieces, since that time, my brother-in-law and both of my parents have also arrived, and the channel here is still HGTV, because my niece, who is six, the elder of the two, our face-off and MasterChef Junior correspondent, Liv, saw on the guide and then yelled, "Can we watch Love It or List It?" She's six. Like, I don't know what she's getting out of the show, but she's super duper into it. So that will probably stand her in good stead whenever she's buying a house in the Toronto area in 20 years or so.
That is damn good parenting.
Oh, and she's coming back for next season of Face Off.
Yeah.
Which is January.
Leah has requested taking the season off from MasterChef Junior for now / ever, because she does not like it or want to watch it. So Liv will be on,
it's two people that
on
have
Face
to do
Off
that,
duty.
So, yeah.
Exactly. All right, moving on.
Wait.
Oh,
I have a real pick.
Oh,
for new programming, which is the Sundance Channel.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Okay, Low Winter Smell or whatever it is was a misstep.
Oh, that wasn't them. That was AMC.
Yeah. Sweet. All
That's
right.
That's why
then,
AMC isn't my pick.
You got thrown by the blue and muted tones. I understand.
Yes, you're right. I did. Yeah. But yeah, Rectify.
Oh, yeah.
Top of the Lake wasn't this year, but I still count it. I think they also did Red Road, which I didn't end up getting through, but it did get renewed, and I think it's actually better than I had patience for.
Yeah. The Honorable Woman is another one of mine that could have been my favorite under the radar show this season. That was also a Sundance show. It was excellent. So good pick.
Yeah, they're doing good stuff. And another honorable mention for new programming, Two Stars, which does The Chair and is currently airing The Missing, which is not everyone's, like, you know, there's been a lot of... crosstalk about, like, enough with the kids in peril, but it's like, well, but it's not really, you know, I don't think it's cynically done, and it's quite an interesting use of flashbacks. Like, I get really impatient with time shifting, and they do it really well, and it's well acted, and so yeah, any network that starts with an S, I guess.
and of course Utlandar.
And rest in peace, boss.
So, Sarah, do you want to go first and then last? Or, I mean, sorry, last then first for these two, because I think you're combining them for these categories.
Well, I'd like to propose a and a memorial prize for the name of this, but I'm not sure if it should go to biggest oh shit moment, which is our next category.
Yes.
So I'll just propose it now.
All right.
I would like to call this the Serena Sutherland Memorial Prize. Speaking of zero to lesbian in no time at all.
Uh-huh.
But it could also go with our next category. So let's talk it out. See what we think.
All right. So I should go?
Sure.
Okay. So for biggest oh shit moment, I have two. The first is when in the season finale of The Americans, when Philip and Elizabeth find out from their handler that their next mission is they're supposed to basically give up their older daughter to become a spy herself, which I have to give credit to the show because normally I have no use for teenage characters or children in general, which I've talked about on this podcast at length. But The Americans pulled off something pretty extraordinary by making Paige actually consequential, and where this storyline is going to go is really exciting to me. So it kind of re-piqued my interest in that show.
Yeah, because before that it was like Paige the Bible sneaking
the Jesus
out.
Freak.
Yeah, I was like, oh,
yeah,
God. Yeah.
Which everyone watching was also like, wait, because she just meets this girl on a bus who's like, hey, you should come to my youth group, and I was like, where the fuck is this going? And then it's like, seems totally innocent, but then this happens, which is like a total zigzag, which is amazing. And my other one was from The Leftovers when, first of all,
darn this wall.
If we had an MVP category for this year, it would be hard fought between Gary Cole and Ann Dowd, who was on every show being amazing. But when her character on The Leftovers, Patty, kills herself, that was fucking crazy. That was my favorite episode of the season, probably. Maybe tied with the one where Carrie Coon's lady goes to the conference, which was also awesome. But yeah, that was a pretty pivotal moment in The Leftovers, and I'm very excited for that show to come back too, because it's going to be in a whole new town and all different, and that's going to be very interesting and should be good. Dave?
In episode 2 of Penny Dreadful, Frankenstein's monster introduces himself by punching a hole in Dr. Frankenstein's new creation stomach and sticks his head through the hole and then walks through him, splitting him in two.
That was so sad. It was sad and crazy.
Yeah, because Proteus was basically like a human puppy dog.
Oh, he was so sweet.
And yeah, Rory, what's his name? Rory?
Kinnear.
Kinnear plays Frankenstein's first monster. He's not a nice guy. Comes back to seek revenge on his father, and does so by splitting his better creation into from the middle of him.
Yeah, that's a good pick.
Pretty good.
Sarah.
I didn't really have a good one for this category. There were a bunch of kind of gotchas on Homeland in the last season, which were a little bit cynical, but also I thought effective. Like, I think the show did get back to just being like a more Alias-y spy show this year, which is good. Like, it's not perfect. Some of it was a bit much, but a lot of it was good, and I thought it was way better. I wasn't sure how it was going to climb out of the hole, and it at least threw an elbow over the lip of the hole. That's what she said. but I guess my real oh shit moment was at the end of Hannibal.
Yeah.
When you see Bedelia on the plane.
Yep.
With him, I actually had to rewind it, and I was like, what? And then just, like, freeze-framed it and stared at them, and Dan and I are like, what the hell?
Looks like Crisis got canceled. That's what that scene was about.
Yeah, totally. Thanks, Crisis.
Yep.
You're the best.
/ worst. Good one. All right, moving yet along even more, coming to the end of our roundup. Most fun social media TV experience. Catfish. The only show I have to watch in real time, would cancel plans in order to not be away from my TV Wednesdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. Now, depending on whenever it comes back, it'll be at either 4 or 3 Hawaiian time. I will be here for you regardless. I got DirecTV. I'm going to be still watching it in real time. And when I was preparing for this very podcast and going through all the stuff that I wrote this year on previously.tv, which is a lot, Catfish, I think, is the single show that I had the most joy and pleasure and fun writing about. So thank you, Catfish, for being so absurd. I'm sure Neve and Max are not going to be able to keep it together for much longer because Neve is ridiculous, but I'm glad that there's going to be at least one more season that I can enjoy eviscerating, I guess. Dave.
I didn't have anything for this, but if I thought long and hard, I bet there was a Twitter thing like TV fart shows or something. But I don't remember. So
all right,
I'm
going to
pass on this one.
Okay, Sarah.
Well, this is actually the category that I wanted to rename the Serena Sutherland Prize because when Serena Sutherland announced, thanks to the Law and Order writers discussed with Elizabeth Rome, is this because I'm a lesbian? Mm-hmm. There was no Twitter, but the SVU episode thread on our old haunt, Television Without Pity, went from 0 to 352 posts, all saying, all caps, what? WTF, like variations on that. So I sort of thought, if there were a Twitter today, I would love to just air that for people who never saw it before and watch the fun. Related, my most fun social media experience is Law & Order SVU and following the various hashtags in which people are completely over it with one Olivia Benson.
Yeah.
Shout out to my girl, Mara Carney. I don't know if you've ever seen that poster, that like meme thing of, it's like a accessories poster of Riker and Picard facepalming.
Yes.
That's us on Twitter during every episode of SVU.
Sure.
And some of the reruns on USA. Mm-hmm. Good times.
Nice. All right. Our penultimate category suggested by Sarah. Do you want to go first since it was yours?
Sure.
Pierce of the year.
Better explain Pierce because we haven't done it in a while.
In case you have forgotten, go ahead, Sarah.
If you're not familiar with the Pierce, we haven't, I think, done a written Pierce in a while, and we should get back to that in 2015.
Oh, no. Jeff Alexander did one just today for the librarians.
Oh, did he?
He did, excellent. And his Pierce was Noah Wiley of the librarians.
Ouch.
Yeah.
The original librarian gets thrown in a volcano. Basically, the idea is that it's the character that's either the most useless appendage to the show, and the show would be able to survive just fine if the character were, per Dave Cole, thrown into a volcano.
Yep.
It would be actively improved by the character being excised.
Named for Pierce Hawthorne of Community, and since Pierce has subsequently been pierced from Community, I feel like that bears out the justness of this nomenclature. Sarah.
I have a couple. I will reserve my second one to see what Tara and Dave said, but my first one is Sergeant Olivia Benson. Girl gots to go.
Yeah, that's a good pick. She's really... And she's the last original cast member. Like, even Ice-T was not in the show at the very beginning, but, like, she's really just as the voice of... I don't even know anymore. Like, she's supposed to be the voice of reason or, like, ethics or... But she's just such a pill all the time. It's impossible to watch her. And now that they've added a foster child, it's like, enough. I agree 100%.
Great. Dave.
Okay, well, previously on Extra Hot Great, I made the case for Gene Belcher being the Pierce of Bob's Burgers because although he does some stuff that is amusing, he's basically just a crazy bucket. He doesn't really have any through line beyond that. Mm-hmm. You'll notice that not a lot of episodes center around Gene for good reason. But to bring something new into the mix, I'm going to say, and God, I can't remember her name now because I just thought of it, but the prostitute from Penny Dreadful can be picked out of that show.
Oh, the prostitute. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. The Billy Piper character.
The tuberculosis prostitute.
Yeah. The hell is her name? I don't remember either.
Yeah. Let's just call her
Brona?
Yes. Thank you.
Brona? Yeah.
Something Irish.
Although I'm sure she's got something. I forget. They gave her a little hint that there was something else going on there.
Maybe.
But
yeah.
There's a lot going on in that show, and she is the weakest part.
She has nothing. Yeah. No, it's true. Mine is the one that I thought had the greatest likelihood of all of my picks to cross over with Sarah, so we'll see if I'm right. Franny Matheson Brody.
Interesting. No.
This is the baby of Carrie and Brody on Homeland, who has... The only purpose that she's served on the show this season has been a pain in Carrie's ass, basically, like all babies are. Yeah, I said it. And also to be really, I know I shouldn't make fun of a baby's looks, but she's weird looking, that kid.
She's
just such...
As an ugly baby myself, I feel like I'm slightly more empowered to say.
Yeah.
She'll look better, I'm sure. She's older and there's more important things that... Not cute. Not cute at all.
Yeah. So
God carved that kid out of a potato. It's not good. And is that a wig? I'm seriously asking.
I
on
don't.
The baby.
It looks like it. It looks like real hair. Maybe it's colored. Maybe it's like chalk colored or something. Because it has to have red hair like Brody. But yeah, she's a zero. I don't care to see Carrie trying to have a home life on that show. And she's just fucking everything up for everybody.
That's the spinoff, Home Life.
Home Life, yeah. So that's my pick. What was your other one that you thought I was going to say, Sarah?
I thought if you had an honorable mention, here is where he would show up. But between Under the Gun and the Sharkita incident, Tim Gunn.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Not forever, but maybe just a couple seasons off.
Yeah.
Because it's amazing how much I don't miss him on All Stars.
No, it's true. And so winding things up, this is also a Sarah Bunting category. TV resolutions for 2015. You would think that mine would be quitting Under the Dome, but I can't. I have to see it through to its horrible conclusion, whatever it may be.
That's bullshit.
However, I am definitely finished with Louis after this year. Holy crow, did it go off a cliff. I certainly wrote enough about the whole Amia storyline of him and the basically mute Hungarian woman that he had a weird love affair with. Not that there's anything wrong with falling in love with Hungarians or mutes, but like, it's just really, maybe he's projecting just a little bit on this woman that
you think.
I do. And I just, I want to continue liking his stand-up. And so for the sake of that happening, I have to stop watching his increasingly not funny quote sitcom, unquote. Sorry to all my fellow critics who apparently consider the show sacrosanct, but no thank you. Dave.
Okay, so my TV resolution for 2015 is to remind people, don't bother picking a side in the late night show arena, because it's like Last Temptation of Christ or Satanic Verses. Nobody's watching, but everybody has an opinion.
Yeah.
Because nobody's really, like, that has been boiled down to Hulu and YouTube clips now. Like, nobody actually watches those shows. Like, the ratings for those shows are nowhere near where they used to be. Because it's like, you know, it's so easy to distill the 3 minutes that people care about. And so you can talk to, you know, I'm sure Colbert is going to have great ratings for the first week because everybody's curious what he's going to be like out of character on an actual show. And after that, it's going to be like the same thing that happened to Conan. Like everybody's, oh, Conan's back. Yay. Nobody fucking talks about Conan anymore. You know, and it's going to be like that for everybody. It's just going to be YouTube clips. So resolution is, don't get too worked up about the late night wars. Be comfortable in the fact that nobody else is watching along with you.
A call for moderation from David T. Cole. Rare, but very sincere. Sarah, take us home.
My TV resolution for 2015 is when a show that I don't have to cover and I admire but am not making a point to watch live or close to it has gathered 2 unwatched episodes on the DVR.
Yep.
Watch them or kill the season pass.
Yeah.
Because there are so many shows right now on both my DVRs where I have like 8 episodes, 4 episodes. Okay. One of them is Frontline,
yes.
Another one is Nova, and I'm doing that to myself. But it's like, there's too much TV, and I'm just not, you know, I don't have that great of taste. I would rather watch Discovery Channel, or Investigation Discovery, and probably was, instead of catching up on American Horror Story, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm not making the effort. So it's like, okay, I'm going to watch this or I'm not. Not? Delete, because it just makes me feel bad, and my DVR is like physically visibly bulging, and I don't need the shame. So enough.
Yeah, I mean, when you said your taste is not that good, not that I agree that your taste is not good, but I agree that my taste is not good. And I thought about when I came to this category, like making some kind of grand declaration that I was going to watch less shit, but we all know I'm not. I clearly, if there's more botched, I'm obviously going to watch it. What am I, stupid? I figured I would stick to a resolution that I would not, that I would be unlikely to break. And I hope there is more botched.
All right, guys. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great.
And another year.
We finally got back on the air with a quick look at the good and the bad of the 2014 TV year. We'll be back next week with a full Extra Hot Great episode and minis. Thanks for your patience, and we'll see you again in the new year. Keep those Canon, Game Time, Crackpot, and No-Nack submissions coming in. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole on behalf of Tara Ariano.
I'm Tapped Dancing.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Behold the instrument of your liberation.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
It's our problem. You won't be happy here unless you fit in. And I want you to be happy.
Well, you know what would make me happy is not ziplining.
Fine!